Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Andy, welcome back to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Dom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, there's a lot I agree with the president on this. Let me get to the one area, though. Maybe I read too much in college economics. Why I did fall asleep in the terrible economics professor at LaSalle. But even in high school, I always remember Smoot Hawley. I mean, it just sounded like such a great thing. That caused world difficulties, tariffs. Are you on board with that, or am I missing something? I was fine, Andy, when President Trump did that with the Chinese. There are, you know, emergencies here because of their stranglehold. But as a policy, that never ends well, does it?
Well, it depends. Depends upon how you use it. I mean, I think a way to quickly summarize President Trump's position on tariffs and on international trade is that he's all for free trade as long as it's fair trade. And if it's not fair trade, then you use tariffs to try and level the playing field. There was a time in our nation's history after World War II, for example, when we really didn't need tariff protections because there was, you know, the only country in the world that didn't have its manufacturing facilities bombed and its fields bombed so it could grow food. The only country that really didn't suffer that kind of devastation from World War II was the United States. And we didn't really need protection from other countries. We needed to help other countries. And we got in the position where we were helping them to the point where maybe we're now helping them too much. There's countries that have risen in economic prosperity since the end of World War II, since the 1960s and 70s. And we still have these relationships with them where they take advantage of us on trade. And it's time to put an end to that.
Now, when you said that too, I still am a bit more in the other camp. But the difference with Trump, say, with Bush and the Republican line before, that I think is the populist and brings people to his side, that you're going to have to experiment and zig and zag here. The classic Republican position, Andy, was always no tariffs, no spending on popular programs that do help people, even if there's some difficulties with them. Would you say this marks Trump as different than that, say, the traditional Republican line?
Yeah, the traditional Republican line, which is represented by our former presidents, both President Bush's, as well as President Reagan, was that tariffs were a good thing because we got cheaper goods from other countries. And people in the United States could take advantage of that. The problem is that America's working class, America's the bottom of the middle class and all of the working class, really paid the price for the discount in product prices by the loss of jobs, the kind of things that J.D. Vance experienced in his area in Ohio. And what we need to, nothing is good in absolutes. Tariffs are not good in absolutes. And having no tariffs, free trade is not good in absolutes. What we have to do is make a rational balance between what's in our country's best interest, what's in the best interest of America's working class, and what isn't. And at this point in time, where we are today, it is not in our best interest to continue, say, with Germany, an agreement where if you sell a Ford in Germany, you have to pay a 25% tariff. But if you sell a Mercedes in Detroit, you pay a 3% tariff. Now, those aren't reasonable kinds of exchange rates. That isn't the kind of thing we want to see on the world market. We want to see people treating us fairly, and we'll treat others fairly. And this is not, by the way, anything that has to do with being anti-German or anti-Japanese or anti-Chinese or anti-anything else. The Japanese and the Germans both build cars in the United States. And when they build those cars in the United States, the profits from those operations would be taxed, I believe, at President Trump's proposed 15% tax, because those goods are made in the United States. It doesn't have to necessarily be a United States company, but they get an advantage of providing products and jobs to American workers. You need a rational balance. And I think what we have with President Trump is somebody who is a business person, will approach these issues rationally, particularly energy issues, which were a big part of his speech today. But he will approach these issues rationally, not ideologically. In other words, they'll have to make sense on paper. They're going to have to make sense to the American people before he's going to support them.
Now, one thing I hope he's armed for, you know, you're right. his instincts, his business, is going to be the Trump tax cuts. I believe in the ABC debate, that's an easy target for them because of the laziness of the media to say they only help the wealthy. Give us an idea of how you would approach that. I mean, a factoid or two here about what that did for the average middle class American.
So let me just give you a broad number that I think kind of brings home the point. In 2017, under higher tax rates, under the tax rates that were in place during the Obama era and before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the top 1% of Americans paid about 38% of all federal income tax. This year, 2021, which is the most recent year for which we have the data, 2021, under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they paid 45%. Back in 2017, tax revenue was about $3.3 trillion. In 2021, it was over $4 trillion. So these are the worst tax cuts for the rich in the history of tax cuts for the rich.
There's a line right there, Andy. You got it. Yes.
They're paying a higher percentage of a larger tax base than they were paying prior to the tax cuts. What that tells you is that people in the higher tax brackets can control when they have and when they don't have income, and more easily than people in the lower tax brackets. And so when you encourage them to generate income, they generate income, and you actually get more revenue at a lower rate. Art Laffer described this to Ronald Reagan in what's called the Laffer curve, and it's something that's proven true under the Trump tax cut. There'll be 4 years at the end of this September, and we only have CBO's forecast for this year, but it's almost September, so it's a pretty good forecast. The 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration, tax revenue has been over $4 trillion every year at these reduced tax rates. Tax rates had never been $4 trillion ever in the history of the country. We've never had a $4 trillion year until 2021. The idea, and by the way, the bottom 50% of taxpayers, the bottom 50%, I should say taxpayers because they don't all pay taxes, but of income earners, pay something like 3% of all federal income tax, while the top 1% are almost paying half. So to say that these were tax cuts for the rich, as I said a minute ago, they were the worst tax cuts for the rich in the history of tax cuts for the rich.
Whisper that in his ear if you're talking with him before. I hope he's talking with you. I'm serious because, you know, his instincts, what he did with the Economic Club today, but in the debate, those are the things that are going to come up. Now, look, as far as I know, Elon Musk is relentless and genius at what he sets his mind to. Putting him in charge of government efficiency seems to be a master stroke. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that'd be really an exciting committee. This is an incredible man. I mean, he really drove the electric car industry, which, you know, whether you like it or not, Tesla makes a heck of a car. And this was the first company that did it. And he didn't start that company, but he drove it to the success it has now. He's actually landing rockets. He has a company that lands rockets, something the United States government had never been able to do. He lands them so you can reuse them. And I was actually on a fishing trip up in the Northwest Territories of Canada, beyond like anywhere you'd ever want to go. You had to like take 3 plane flights to get there and then take one of those little otter planes to get to the lodge.
Can I ask you, why do you do something like that? Go to a beach. We walk down a wildwood, Andy. You don't have to be fishing out there. We got fish here.
You should see the pictures of the northern pike and lake trout we caught. But leaving that aside for a moment, we had internet at the lodge because of Starlink, because of Elon Musk. I was able to use my. This is a man. This is like, I don't know if you've ever read Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, but he's the John Galt of this generation. And to put him on a committee like that, if he becomes dedicated to seeing that the goals of reducing government waste are accomplished, could you imagine Elon Musk working with Donald Trump? I get excited just thinking about the possibilities of what that could mean for this country. It's just a tremendous, tremendous possibility, and I hope everybody in Pennsylvania is listening to your show, because my opinion is that Pennsylvania decides this race. So I think everybody out there should know the future of America is in your hands.
I'm putting that on the list. Just tell Trump if he doesn't know. We agree. put all your chips in when one of these guys says, sir, we need to put a billionaire in Nevada and all. No, push the trip. Every chip you have, push it into Pennsylvania. Whoever wins Pennsylvania is going to win. It comes down to that.
I absolutely agree, and which is why it's important. Everybody that listens to this call, get out and vote. Don't let people tell you that you shouldn't vote because there's cheating. That's people that don't want you to vote. Get out there and vote. Get your friends to vote. Help everybody to vote. Do it. We need to win. We're going to need to win Pennsylvania by maybe more than more than the votes that are cast. And
exactly.
To do that, we're going to need everybody to vote. I think we can do it. I believe we can do it. And I'm from Ohio myself, so very close to the Pennsylvania border, and I'm counting on our fellow Pennsylvanians to really get out there and vote for Trump this election.
We will do that, Andy. Your book is out, too, Other People's Money, How Progressives Hijacked Your Investments to Achieve Their Aims. That's out there right now, right?
Well, I've got the book's called The Tyranny for the Good of Its Victims. And it's about the ugly truth about stakeholder capitalism. And it comes out in January. So
Okay. Keep
your eyes open. And I've got one from 2018 called The Capitalist Comeback about Trump's economic policies. That's been out since 2018. But the next one comes in January.
And Andy, one other thing, too. I saw today there is some kind of metric, I'll call it that, around LGBTQ plus issues. And I think it was Molson and Ford and somebody else publicly pretty much said, we're not going to be involved in that. We're not going down that path. Do you see corporate America turning a bit away from the woke, away from the DEI?
Absolutely. DEI basically stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it basically, Harris is very much in favor of this. She talks about it regularly. And she was a DEI hire for vice president. And I'm not saying that to be disparaging. President Biden said that. But she says it's about equity. In other words, it's about people ending up at the same place. It's not about equality, which is about people having equal opportunity. So it's a rejection of Martin Luther King's statement that he looks forward to a day when his children mm-hmm. will be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. She wants people judged by factors other than merit. And initially it was pushed by BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, these huge investment firms that people were unaware really controlled America's corporate culture because they controlled so much stock. It was other people's stock. They invested other people's money, but they voted those shares. As people have come to understand what was going on with DEI, what was going on with these large investment firms, consumers have started to react. And they've been guided recently by a guy named Robbie Starbuck, who's done a great job getting the word out on this. But consumers are now responding to these corporations, and people that make tractors or make pickup trucks or, you know, make rifles or make motorcycles are realizing that if they don't change their policies and go to back to a merit-based society, which Elon Musk has been very, very much in favor of, if they don't go back to this merit-based society, they're going to lose customers. And so I think you're going to see increasingly that companies will make that transition.
Andy, thank you so much. Enjoyed talking fishing with you, too, also. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom. Same here.
Tom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3, from Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.